Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hi, welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. Today I'm talking with Joe Dowling, CTO of Cydera. How are you doing, Joe? What's it doing?
I'm good, Ronan. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
No problem. So before we start, tell me a bit about your background so we know who you are.
Yeah, so I'm originally from North Longford, married with two teenage daughters living here in Glasson outside of Athlone. So I went, after I left Longford, I went to Queen's University in Belfast. So that's where I got my degree, and it was actually in electronics. So not in the software industry to start off with, but when I moved to my first job in London with Nokia, very quickly moved into the software domain. So that was writing embedded software for Nokia mobile phones way back in the early 90s, you know, and that whole mobile revolution was happening. Moved to California then with Nokia and worked in what's called Telecom Valley over there, which is Southern California, San Diego. Spent 10 years there. Actually, my daughters were born there. And then the wife got homesick. So in 2004, we ended up moving back to Ireland because Ireland was booming at the time. And so I've been here ever since. So I've been with Cydera now for about 6 years. It'll be 6 years in January. Yeah. 6 months ago, I took over as CTO. So the previous CTO was one of the founders of the company. He moved upstairs to be on the board of directors. And so I took over from him. Also, I recently completed a master's in cloud-native computing in the local university, which is now TUS, Technology University of the Shannon, used to be AIT. So it was part-time, 2 years part-time, so really, really enjoyed that. And some of my colleagues were also on the course, so that was nice as well. Yeah, so that's just a quick update, Ronan and myself.
And what does Cydera do?
So Cydera was formed in 2013 as a software services company. So we started off providing agile software teams to Ericsson, who have a very large software development center here in Athlone. So in the beginning, it was primarily Java software development, back-end, large enterprise systems. You know, because it was with Ericsson, it was mainly in the telecom space. So, you know, enterprise software to manage large telecom, mobile telecom networks for the likes of Vodafone, AT&T, all over the world. Gradually moved into the front end as well. So doing, you know, web front ends for these large enterprise systems, you know, using popular UI frameworks like React and Angular and advanced JavaScript. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, we made the move into the cloud. So, you know, we were doing some proof of concepts for some of our customers. So we ended up getting about 40 or 50 of our people trained in AWS. So that's where we started. We started with AWS. We became a partner with them. Got a lot of our people trained and certified in that technology. And then started doing mainly lift and shift in the beginning, you know, lifting applications, shifting them from on-premise servers that our customers would have into AWS. And increasingly, our customers started coming to us and saying, can you do the same thing in Azure and Microsoft Azure? And then recently, we've spun up a 10-person team in Google GCP, which is the Google platform. So we're still primarily AWS, but you know, looking at those other cloud technologies as well. So we have 170 people. About 100 of them are probably still Java developers, you know, 30 to 40 are cloud, so that's a mix of solution architects, cloud architects, and cloud engineers. And then a lot of, you know, recently a lot of DevOps and CICD, which is continuous integration, continuous deployment. A lot of our people have got skilled in that as well. So yeah, you know, we still feel like we're a small company, right? We're very easy to do business with, very friendly. You know, the CEO, she sits in the middle of everybody when we are in the office, which obviously, Ronan, we're not in this for the last year or so. But, you know, the founders and the CEO are very approachable, sit in the middle of everybody else in an open plan office when we are in the office. So It's a very nice culture. It, you know, like most software companies and IT companies, we're very diverse. You know, we have people from all over the world, whether it's India, Brazil, Eastern Europe. So we've got something like 21 or 22 different nationalities, which I think is typical for this industry. Yeah, so that's kind of an overview of Sodero, Ronan.
Yeah, and also you recently got investment of $4.5 million and you also announced some new jobs. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, so we've continued to grow. You know, we probably had 20 to 30% growth over entire career, starting off from that one team, which was, you know, 6 or 7 people. So that growth is continuing and accelerating a little bit, you know, and during the pandemic, you know, it was very uncertain in the beginning the way things were going to work out for all of us, I suppose, but it very quickly became apparent that it really drove our business. And our existing customers and new customers were coming to us looking for us to do more digital transformation. So really that 75 person increase in headcount is for our existing customers who are increasing their requirements, and then also the digital transformation and move to the cloud. So it's probably 50-50 between what I might call our legacy business of Java back-end development and 50% in digital transformation and the cloud. And then the other part of it is we've also started off a consulting division. So that's a part of the business where we're just going to work with a portfolio of consultants that we have and send them out to customers. So that's also part of that growth. The consulting is a little bit different than what we've done before, which is what we would have termed teams as a service, right? We provide a team, we provide a management layer and delivery layer on top of it. The consultants are just kind of guns for hire that we would send out to customers when needed, probably on more short-term basis than the teams of a service, which tends to be a bit longer term. Yeah, so that's where the growth's coming from.
And I guess also you found in the past 5 years technology has changed so much, so what you used to use is now been superseded.
Exactly. So I mean, you know, technology changes very fast, Ronan, as we all know. So I mean, and you know, the AWS certification and the training that we did is an example of that. You know, you continuously need to train your people, and you need to, you know, encourage people to get training, and so that's continuously what we try to do. You know, and of course, there's a cost to that, right? There's a cost in terms of the cost of training, and then there's also a cost for us in terms of when these people are getting trained, we don't have them out billable on a project. But, you know, and there's a quote from somebody that says, you know, what if we have to train all our people? What's the cost of going to be that? You know, if we train them, then they'll leave. But then the quote is, well, if you don't train them and they stay, you know, so you need to train your people. You need to get them upskilled in latest technologies. So and that's crucial, and especially in this fast moving technology world.
And I guess as we're moving to more cloud based solutions, that means that no matter what OS you have, you can use software. It's not going to be an issue of using it, because if you've got like a Mac or you've got basically a Windows computer, because the software is now mostly cloud based, it's easier to use on both OSs without any issues.
Yeah, so really, you know, you're kind of outsourcing that the operating system to the cloud provider, you know, and it depends whether what type of service you're using, whether it's software as a service and infrastructure as a service, or really you're relying on the cloud provider to keep your software up to date, to do the patching, and to make sure that you're using the latest software, and that's very important from a security point of view, that you're running the latest updates and the latest patches. And if you're a small or medium-sized organization, keeping on top of all of that, especially, as you had mentioned, Ronan, people are on many different devices nowadays. You know, so some people, such as yourself, are on a Mac, yeah. I'm on a Windows, somebody else is on a tablet, somebody else is in a VDI in a cloud somewhere. So trying to keep on top of what all the latest patches are is extremely challenging. And so outsourcing that to a cloud provider, you're really taking advantage of the economies of scale that they have, right? So they are obviously dealing with hundreds and thousands of customers running on the same cloud platform. So they are keeping their both their hardware and their BIOS and their firmware and then the OS as up to date as possible with all the latest updates. patches and upgrades. So
because it can be annoying.
That's definitely one of the advantages of the cloud.
Yeah, because it can be annoying if suddenly you've got you'll find out that the software you plan to use won't work because not everyone's using the same OS. But if you now have your team and different OS is able to use it, that's not going to be an issue anymore.
Exactly. You know, and then you can take it one step further then and go to software as a service where the whole entire ecosystem is controlled by someone else, you know, the cloud provider or a partner within the cloud ecosystem, you know. So they take care of the application side as well and any updates that are required to the application to make it compatible with, you know, future versions of operating systems is also taken care of. So it depends how far down that as a service path you want to go.
Because at the moment you've got a scenario where you've got a company right now who might have just gotten new Windows 11 PCs and they've still got in the office Windows 10, maybe Windows 8 PCs, and patching all them together is a nightmare because you're not sure if a patch will work and make you able give you ability to use your legacy software again. Whereas if it's all cloud-based, that's taken care of by somebody else and they manage your security for you. So you can do the job that you're designed. You can do your job you do very well and not worry about that. Less headaches.
Exactly. And you can concentrate on what your core business is. You know, because a lot of these companies are not IT companies, right? They're pharmaceutical companies or manufacturing companies. So they need to be concentrating their resources and their money on their core business, you know. And so outsourcing it, you know, and it used to be that outsourcing used to be a more expensive option, but now with the cloud, it's actually less expensive, you know, because you're taking advantage of those economies of scale. A lot of times it's less expensive than, you know, trying to maintain your own systems internally with your own resources, you know, on the job market we're in, Ronan. These IT resources are expensive, you know, so if you have to have a team of your own IT people looking after your own on-premise servers and IT infrastructure, that's expensive, you know.
Because I remember years ago, the cloud used to be charged per instance, and I remember it could be expensive, whereas as it was used more and more now, that no longer is an option. It's so cheap now.
Yeah, and you're getting charged for what you're actually using, you know. So even though you have that instance, if that instance is not running, you're not getting charged for it. Now again, it's not to say that in every single a scenario that it will be less expensive and less cheaper to run in the cloud. And I mean, I always say to customers, you know, you need to, if you're going to move to the cloud, it shouldn't just be about cost, right?
Yeah.
If cost is the only driver, then maybe it's not the right thing to do right now, because it needs to be about cost is one thing, but it also needs to be about scalability. It also needs to be about security. You know, you need to have some other things, because if it's just about cost, then sometimes you can be disappointed because, you know, you're expecting maybe to have 10% of the cost and it turns out to be much less than that and people are disappointed. So you need to have other reasons for going to the cloud rather than just cost.
I would suggest that if someone says they're going to go to the cloud and then they balk at the price, I'm going, okay, what happens if 2 years' time you get a security breach? What's that going to cost you in reputation and in money? Whereas when you're going to the cloud, your cloud provider is doing that for you. You don't have to worry about that. So in the short term, you're seeing a high cost, but in the long term, you're not. Because you know you're not going to get a breach or anything else, and you know it's not going to affect you.
Yeah, I agree.
And you got to look at it not 1 year, but over 5 or 10 years, and work it out then, and then figure, if during those 5 years you got a breach, what happens then?
Exactly, and there's also the innovation side of it as well, because what we've seen is that moving to the cloud drives innovation because you have access to all of these other services. You know, we recently worked with a utility provider who just wanted to move to the cloud because they didn't want to have to maintain their on-premise stuff. But once they were in the cloud, you know, they were having problems with data. They have an IoT sensors out in the field and they were missing data, and they, you know. And we told them, well, you can use AI or machine learning that's already in the cloud. It's just as a service. You can just call this system and it will fill in the gaps in your data, right? And so if they weren't in the cloud, they would never have even thought of that. So the cloud drives innovation, you know, and once you're in there, you get to realize all of the other possibilities and the services that are in there. We see that as well with DevOps and CI/CD, you know, because these tools are so integrated into these cloud platforms, and whether it's AWS or Azure or Google, they all have the same type of stuff. You know, you can start to automate a lot of what you were doing manually. You know, and when you're onboarding new customers, you know, it's now, you know, instead of taking weeks to onboard customers, it's taken a couple of days, because you just run an automatic pipeline. It spins up a new tenant of that SaaS application, and you're good to go, because a lot of it's done automatically. So, So I think that the cloud definitely drives innovation, which is very positive. And to your point, you know, years down the line, that's going to be a huge financial boon for these companies. If they can innovate, that's going to drive their bottom line.
Because you get some companies who want savings in day one and in year one, and you're saying no, it's going to be in year five before you actually see that. And then when they look at it, they say, "What is that?" Well, basically, you mentioned earlier about AI machine learning, how that can be done to cut down tasks you just that was doing. And at times, you get a job where some of your staff is doing menial tasks, and they get bored with it and they make mistakes. AI machine learning will take care of that, and means those staff can do jobs they love to do and they're trained to do.
Exactly, and you know that example I talked about, that company had people spending days trawling through data, trying to fill in the gaps in the data manually.
Yeah.
And now that's all done automatically, you know. So those people are still employed with that company, but they're doing much more valuable work for them, and much more work that's much more meaningful to them. So yeah. they're more happy rather than trawling through gigabytes of data trying to fill gaps, right? So what you said earlier is true. You know, you have happier employees. You know, and some people say with the whole AI machine learning that it's going to result in people losing their jobs, but that's not what we see. Those people end up doing more valuable work for the company and more satisfying work for themselves. It's not like they get laid off. They end up moving to another part of the business where, you know, human skills are more appropriately used rather than sort of manual tasks that they would have been doing previously. So it's all positive.
I guess that leads into the research that you did in the areas such as IT skills gap and cloud adoption as well. What did you find on your research?
Yeah, so one of the big things that came out of it was, you know, companies, one of the things that's blocking companies to do digital transformations in general and move to the cloud is lack of cloud skills. So almost half of people said lack of cloud skills was one of the things that was holding them back. And about three quarters also said that, you know, not moving to the cloud negatively impacted their business. So you know, the skills shortage costs these companies an average of $300K a year. And so that's a big problem. But here in Ireland, I would say, you know, on the positive side of it, you know, we are one of the most educated countries in the world. I think the EU average for third level education is 40%. We're running close to 60% in terms of our educated workforce.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, we have a very open economy in terms of attracting foreign talent, you know, and that's important as well, you know. So we have homegrown talent. We have a very good education system, both at primary, secondary, and third level. But we also need to be an attractive place for people to come, you know. And that's where, you know, things like quality of life, good quality schools, lower cost of living, where, you know, which it depends where you're talking about. For us here in the Midlands, you know, it's a lower cost of living to Dublin, obviously. And then the proximity to universities and colleges is something that's of benefit to us as well. I suppose the other thing that skills gap showed, particularly in the IT industry, you know, was the gender gap, right? So, I mean, if I look at my own organization, we can see that about 20% of our engineers are women. So that's something that we're actively trying to address.
Yeah.
One of our management team, Kelly, is very heavily involved in women in technology and STEM in the schools. So that is something that I think can help solve this crisis of skill shortages if we can get more females into our industry. You know, then that just increases the pool of people that we have access to and can help companies to move in this digital transformation space. I think it's in our own case, it's interesting that, you know, while the engineering population is about 20% women, the management team is 50%, right? Yeah. So Carmel, who's our CEO, is obviously female, and 50% of our management team. So it's somewhat easier to, you know, in the management layer, you know, our head of finance, our head of HR, our head of marketing are all female. So it's kind of easier in that domain than in the tech, the IT and tech side.
Yeah.
But that's something that came out of that IT skills survey.
Right, now, one more thing we think about right now, we're in a pandemic. And how has that changed if people view digital transformation and moving to the cloud?
Yeah, so I think it's definitely had a huge impact on how people view digital transformation and the shift to the cloud. You know, I think it's basically proven to a lot of people the viability of working in the cloud and the digital collaboration tools, you know, because there would have been a little bit of old school thinking there about, you know, this is going to affect productivity, but that's not what we've seen, you know. And you know, this pandemic is obviously a horrible thing, but one of the silver linings come out of this cloud is that, excuse the pun, but is the fact that productivity hasn't reduced, right? And so some people say it's improved, but you know what we've seen in our business, because we're working in an agile way, you know, we have all these metrics that we can measure productivity and what's delivered from our software teams, and so we saw it flat.
Yeah.
Which is very positive under the cloud of this global catastrophe, that our teams continue to deliver what they were delivering before. And so if we average it out over the last year and a half, it's about the same, which is very positive. So, you know, it's proved that these digital collaboration tools work, that having your applications and your data in the cloud is something that worked really well. And I think the fact that when the pandemic first hit and all of these companies, ourselves included, were within the space of a few days transitioned out of the office to work from home, and okay, maybe it wasn't seamless, but it was certainly very, very quick and very rapid. You know, and some of these companies had to move, you know, all of our employees are working off laptops, but some companies had to move desktops and infrastructure, and in the space of 3 or 4 days, everybody was at home working. And if you had said to any of us before then, Ronan, would such a thing be possible? You know, we all would have said, no way, you couldn't do that in that time frame. But we did it. And I think that's what the pandemic has shown. You know, I mean, necessity is the mother of innovation, really. It's shown what can be achieved, right? And I think we're seeing that in the public sector as well. If you look at the COVID app, you know, the public sector rolled that out in a few months.
Yeah.
And if prior to the pandemic, we said there's no way the public sector could do something at that speed, you know, and that's a cloud-based solution. And they worked with partners and they rolled it out and got it working. And it's a huge success. And I think that's what we need to do with digital transformation in the cloud. We need to publicize those success stories, you know, and that will act as inspiration to other parts of the public sector to say, look, this is possible. You know, because I think in the public sector, there was a few failures that happened, you know, the PPARS stuff that maybe, you know, put movement to electronic health records on the back foot because nobody wanted to have that huge political failure again. So I think now is the opportunity to highlight these huge success stories within the public sector, and you know, that can benefit all of us, obviously, if they can do it.
And I guess also the thing that basically about 10 years ago we couldn't do what we do now because technology wasn't as advanced, which helps a lot.
Right. Yeah. I agree. And I mean, if you think about the HSE and the cyber attack, I mean, that was all on premise. That was all, you know, the stuff that they had in the cloud wasn't affected by that attack.
Yeah.
Now, I know there was some issues with you know, credentials were stored on-premise, and some of those, they weren't able to get to some of those, which allowed to get into the cloud, but the data and the applications in the cloud were unaffected. And I think that's one of the stories that it needs to come out to say, listen, in general, cloud is safer from a security point of view. Because when we started having conversations with customers 5 or 6 years ago about moving to the cloud and doing digital transformation, you know, the first question was always security.
Yeah.
You know? So you're going to put our applications on the public internet and it's going to be publicly accessible. Those were always the fears. But I think one of the things the pandemic has done is it has, you know, has removed this idea that the cloud is less secure, you know, and in fact, it's more secure in most, not in all cases, but in most cases, organizations' security posture will be improved when they move to the cloud.
And also you've got a scenario where you have basically older people don't look at computers, but they've got a smartphone. And when you move them to the cloud and they're your customers, for example, if you're working for the government and on one of their products, and the customers, the fact that they say it's because of the pandemic, it's now done online, but they can access an app via their phone or go online via their phone and do this, whereas 10 years ago, you couldn't do that.
Exactly, and there's a lot of elements to that. You know, it's obviously got to do with the cloud technologies, but then it's also got to do with where the infrastructure has gone, right? In order to do that, you need to have good broadband connectivity. You know, and okay, broadband's not perfect everywhere in the country, but it did allow us to connect into these cloud applications and cloud resources by having, you know, good mobile connectivity. You can connect from your phone, you can connect from your home. You know, the rollout of the fiber broadband across the country has accelerated because of the pandemic, and so that's another hugely positive thing that's come out of it.
Well, for me, what I find funny is that about a month or so ago, Virgin Media announced they're going to have 10 gigabyte broadband speeds available. And that to me is incredible that you can have that in your home.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, you know, and a lot of people would say, what would you ever need that for? But the reality is, it's always increasing, you know. If you provide that type of bandwidth, then somebody's going to come up with an application or a service that will take advantage of it, you know. And so 10 years from now, we'll be looking at, you know, 100, 200, you know, it's always going to increase, I think, because people will just fill that capacity with some more value added service or application.
Yeah, because I find that basically my broadband at the moment, I've got half a gig. I was getting 260, 280 gig when my last package, and then when I updated, they said, "Oh yeah, they're bringing out a new set of box." And with that new box, they're increasing your broadband to half a gig, and said, "If you pay a bit extra, you can get 1 gig." Because no, I don't need 1 gig because I'm living alone. I don't need that. But as you're right, you're going to find software packages that are coming out, packages they're using, that will use that increased speeds, and you'll need that. So in other words. But 10 years ago, I was happy with to get 10 megabytes broadband. And at that time, if you're streaming or playing video games online, you need a 5 meg speeds. Nowadays, 5 meg speeds isn't enough for doing that service. It's going to increase.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're going to find with when you're doing work stuff as well, like 5, 10 years ago when you were doing Skype calls, it was done, but all it was done was just audio. Now you're doing it with video as well. And that need more space to be able to see the video. Like if you're doing like a group meeting and you need to see people's faces, years ago that was done via an audio call. Now that's going to be done via video calls, and that requires more bandwidth and more speed as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other thing for us in particular, one thing that made the transition to home easier was that an awful lot of people are working in VDIs. Right, so they're working, their desktop is in the cloud.
Yeah.
So they have a laptop, but really most of their critical work is done inside, you know, an Amazon workspace, or if they're working for one of the clients, they're in a virtual desktop inside the firewall of the client's office. So that meant, you know, we weren't exposed to potentially security issues of people taking their laptops home and not being on the office network. So, and again, the broadband and the infrastructure is key to that, because those, you know, using a desktop that's in the cloud is only really usable if you've got fairly good connectivity, right? You don't want it to be lagging. And so that's what, you know, we're advising our customers for security reasons, you know, move your desktop to the cloud if you can, because it's a much more secure way of working, you know, and keep all your data inside the cloud and don't have any of your data that's locally stored on laptops. You know, it's particularly important in this work from home situation that we're all in.
I remember 4 years ago when you were working in an office, you were working from a mainframe onto a dumb terminal. And nowadays, that's come back again, but now dumb terminals are called thin clients. So any computer you have now is thin client, and was doing what dumb terminals did, but years ago, dumb terminal had limited functionality. A thin client doesn't, but it's the exact same premise. And it's great to see that, it's funny to see we're going back to what we used to do years ago in a new way.
Some of this stuff, you're right, some of this stuff, Ronan, does come full circle. I think the interesting thing we're seeing is we don't see thin clients so much. I mean, even our guys, they still want a good laptop, yeah. Right? So they still want a laptop with 32 gig and with a Core i7, even though they're remoting into a VDI, but they still want a nice laptop. So it's not really a thin client. And you know, so there's, and it's kind of nice. I mean, I'm working that way a little bit myself, because I have my Windows laptop, you know, and I can go onto the internet and do whatever I want on the internet with the laptop. And I have this Teams call and everything else. But then my VDI is a Red Hat Linux system. So then I can go in there. Yeah. And so I have my Linux. So I have kind of the best of both worlds. Like, you know, on my local laptop, I can have Windows or Mac or whatever it is. Yeah. And then in the VDI, I can play around with Linux. And that takes me back to my old days when I first started doing this stuff. I was on Unix, you know, Solaris systems. So it's a nice way of working, I think, where you have two different types of environments.
When I first called years ago, back in the early 90s, I was doing stuff on digital VAX. And we had this green and white screen and dumb terminals, and I remember that very well. And to me right now, a thin client to me can be dumb terminal or can't be. Depends on what you get, because my view is anyone who's logging into to a cloud terminal from the laptop, I call it a thin client. Even though it mightn't be in theory, because it's got, you said, 32 gig, whatever, all the kind of other things, I still think, well, it's still basically, to me, a thin client in a way, because it's easy to access it. But it's got more bells and whistles than you would have had years ago when it was called dumb terminal.
Right. And probably compared to the processing power and memory and storage you have in the cloud, it is pretty thin, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that's still a valid way to describe it.
Because I can remember years ago, my first computer had 8K memory. It's going Commodore VIC-20. It's going back years. Yeah. I got it in Pizza Pronounce years ago in 1980. And I'm thinking 8K memory, wow, that was a great thing. Then you can buy a 32K expansion pack to give you more memory. And now I'm looking at that, and that would basically, at the time, that was the memory that was more the memory that the same memory they used to power man going to the moon. And now you're looking at a computer in a car, just a computer car, and it's got more power than that. I'm thinking, wow, how do we cope with 8K memory?
I know. Your smartphone is much more powerful than any computer that was in a rocket that went to the moon.
And before we finish, wondering how do you think Ireland's tech landscape is looking at the moment?
I mean, again, I'd be very positive in terms of the tech landscape in Ireland. You know, I mean, the top five global software companies are here. You know, 9 of the 10 top technology companies, 14 of the 15 medtech, 8 of the 10 financial services. You know, so I think it's extremely healthy. I think we're a hotspot in the whole of Europe for technology. There's 40,000 people working in IT. You know, almost 40 billion in exports. So I think it's a very easy place to do business. I think, you know, as a country, we make it easy for businesses to come in here. We make it easy for the skilled people to come here and relocate here. It's not very difficult if you have the right skills. So I think it's a very young, vibrant well-educated population that we have. So I see it very, very positive. I suppose, you know, maybe one thing we're lacking is, you know, we don't have that huge, big indigenous technology company, you know, whether it's an Ericsson in Sweden or a Nokia in Finland. And I don't quite know why that is. You know, we do have a lot of startups, but, you know, maybe it's that the entrepreneurs sell out early, and so the companies never, you know, they get swallowed up by some other big multinational before they get to the scale. I don't know, but I do think, you know, we're one of the leading IT hubs in the world, you know. Yeah. So we're not, maybe we're not quite up there with Israel and Singapore, but we're not too far behind them. So it's hugely positive.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I met one of the Costin brothers, and he was telling me they couldn't start a company in Ireland because nobody in Ireland would invest in them or believe in them, even though they already made a company and sold it, and they had proven entrepreneurship. You had to go to America to do it. Same way, yeah. If you look at, but they come back here now, and they've got a big office in Dublin, which do a lot of R&D, which is very, very great. And now they're linking up with TikTok to do various things as well for them. And then you've got other companies like Intercom, who basically had to start off in America, but they've got a big Irish presence. And you see a lot more happening where maybe they have to go to America to get the money to do it, but they end up with a big Irish presence, big office in Ireland.
Yeah, and so that's a good point. Maybe it's the lack of investment, you know, because they were looking for investment, and in order to get that investment, they had to go to California.
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of it. I mean, I also think, you know, if you look at Zuckerberg, right? He you know, Microsoft offered him $300 million in the early days of Facebook, and he didn't take it.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years later, somebody else offered him $2 billion, and he didn't take it. I think somehow our entrepreneurs, maybe, you know, you get a big offer for your company, you're going to take it, you know, and hold it, holding back maybe and growing it indigenously is something that's difficult to do in the face of, you know, these large sums of money.
Yeah, because when it comes to front of your eyes, you see a dollar sign, you're thinking, what can I do with that money? And you don't think, basically, I want to one day be that version of Zuckerberg or Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or one of these tech giants in America. I want to be one of them. And I guess we'll end the podcast on that positive note that Darling landscape is looking positive and good in the future. And also, because of remote working, it doesn't matter where you are in Ireland, you can still get the job done.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's hugely positive place to do this type of business. I truly believe that.
Right now. Well, thanks for that, Joe. And have a great day. And hopefully in the future, we'll hear some more good news from you guys.
Okay, yeah, I enjoyed it. Thanks, Ronan. It was a good chat we had.
All right, take care. Thanks, Ronan.
Okay, there.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.